One of the Office of Management and Budget's main goals in rewriting Circular A-123 was to grow the use of internal controls across the government. Since the 1980s, the financial management community has been the most active user of that oversight approach. David Mader is the controller of the Office of Management and Budget. He tells executive editor Jason Miller about why more areas of government will benefit from using risk management and internal controls.
The origins of internal controls was more than and should be more than just financial management. I need internal controls in IT systems. I need internal controls in how I deliver a particular mission program. I need, and I'll use my call center example. I need controls in, how I receive and how I queue up calls. So we're trying in this document to get people to think more broadly around internal controls beyond just financial controls. Is can I track a particular, obligation from appropriation to a contract? That's important and things that we need to do effectively. But we also need to make sure that we have controls in all of our IT systems and certainly, heightened interest in controls around cyber and protection of our assets.
So talk a little bit about the changes in A-123 around internal controls. What were some of the big areas that you guys looked at and changed or modernized?
What's going to be, I think, fascinating to people is when you look at the table of contents on A-123, you're going to obviously see the brand new section on enterprise risk management. But what you're also going to see is a brand new section around establishing and operating internal controls, and also a new section around what is characterized as internal controls additional considerations. And let me touch on that last part first. One of the things that you'll see in the update is a section that deals with very important management functions, whether it be privacy, acquisition, or grants. And we've taken the time, and I think this reinforces my earlier point, that it's more than just financial management controls. It's if I'm running a grants program, what kind of controls do I need for the grants program? What kind of controls do I need for acquisition, for contracting? And certainly in this day and age, what kind of controls do I need to have in place to ensure the safeguard of PII data? So we've expanded, I think, greatly the internal control application going forward.
When you talk about the application, it's again, is this going to be very similar to the ERM piece, the enterprise risk management piece, where you're going to give people a flexible framework, or is this more prescriptive? How would you compare maybe the two in terms of the implementation?
I think internal controls are a little bit more prescriptive because we sort of bring our guidance back to the GAO Green Book, which is much more prescriptive than should be. And when you sort of think about internal controls and when you think about enterprise risk management and you think about how do I mitigate risk, well, one way to mitigate risk is actually to have effective controls in place. So they're incredibly interwoven as concepts. And that was the reason when we were looking to put in place an ERM program across the executive branch, we chose A-123 because we think they really are mutually supportive of each other.
It's interesting the way you talk about the fact that the risk management and internal controls are interwoven. You also changed the name of the guide to recognize that. How much of that, changing the name is maybe secondary to the bigger issue, but that shows the dedication. It shows the importance of this integration of the two, if you will. First of all, I guess, what is the new name? Remind us again. And then how did that kind of play into the whole vision for the new A-123?
The new name is Management's Responsibility for Enterprise Risk Management and Internal Controls. And, we debated back and forth on the positioning of, do you put internal controls first? Do you put enterprise risk management first? And we landed on enterprise risk management because we felt that internal controls are a key component of an overall strategy and risk management program. And I think I've mentioned in previous discussions with folks over the last couple of months is we see this fitting very nicely into each agency's strategic management program, from identifying my strategic goals to conducting performance reviews. So again, I think all of these concepts fit very nicely together. And again, they're mutually supportive and complement each other. I wanted to also, Jason, touch on some next steps. I mentioned the playbook, which will roll out on July the 29th. Right after that, in the month of August, we're going to be spending time with each of the agencies, going out and visiting with their teams, answering questions, helping them sort of think through how they're going to now implement this over the next several months. So this is, you know, this program starts with the issuance and then sort of rolls through the fall and, you know, and into the winter. Some departments have, you know, fairly mature programs. Other organizations are beginning the process. And we will, you know, continue to work with each of the organizations over the ensuing year.
Related to that, working with agencies and the training and answering their questions, you also have the oversight responsibility of ensuring agencies do develop a ERM program, do use internal controls. If you will, what is the process by which they'll report back to you or you'll check up on them? I know you've talked about different stat sessions. I don't imagine there's going to be a new stat session, but will be integrated with other stat sessions, or how does that oversight process work?
It goes back to how this fits into the overall strategic management concept. So when you read the circular and you look at the chapter on ERM, you'll see a sort of set of activities starting with the rollout, these August meetings, and then people starting to develop their initial framework and risk profiles. It really culminates next year in the spring of 2017 when OMB will be conducting the strategic reviews required under GPRA modernization and the strategic plan. So part of what we will look at next spring as part of that strategic review will be, tell us now, show us how you've actually implemented ERM. Because again, we want this to be an integral part of strategic management and how agencies manage day in and day out. We don't want it as an appendage, you know, sitting off to the side. We want it embedded in the management culture of every organization and component.
One of the things about by next spring 2017 is there's a pretty good chance, Dave, you won't be in the position you're in today. And I know you have strong deputies, you have strong people in not just OMB, but Federal Financial Management. Is there part of the ERM and part of the A123 is naming someone to push the belly button, right? Not necessarily chief risk officer, but someone to be in charge, a senior accountable official. How did that come about versus adding another C-suite, a CRO, if you will?
As part of the rollout process, we're asking each of the agencies and departments to identify an individual who will be our point of contact over the next year to work with us in implementing the ERM program. Now, you know, as I've said, you know, previously to folks, is we want this to be flexible to fit within how a department, how a bureau, a subcomponent manages in day in and day out. There are some departments that may choose to establish a, you know, a position called chief risk officer. There may be others that say, well, you know, I'm going to have a risk counsel. The point is that we want, again, and I know I'm sounding like a broken record, is we want this as part of how organizations manage themselves day in and day out. And we're giving people the flexibility, but we're also holding them accountable next spring in being able to present to OMB what their risk management program is, how they've their initial set of, you know, risks that they've identified. So I think the way we've done it gives them flexibility, yet ensures accountability that everybody has moved to this new approach.
Of the agencies that you've talked to that maybe are ahead of some others, as you mentioned, Commerce, Treasury, some others, do they have a CRO? Do they have a risk counsel? Or is this this idea of whether that senior accountable official, are you taking it from the private sector who set it up in maybe obviously many different ways, but you see at least some kind of pattern or some kind of standard, if you will, that said most agencies or most organizations are doing one of these three or four approaches?
Well, in the case of Treasury has an individual who is identified as their chief risk officer, but they also have a risk counsel. Commerce has a risk counsel. And you look at private sector and best practices, and again, it's not a one-size-fits-all. Again, I think for those private sector firms that have done this and done this well, they've embedded this in their overall management structure. And that's why we want to give the flexibility that we have given.
David Mader is the controller of the Office of Management and Budget. Speaking there with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. You can learn more about what's in the updated Circular A-123 on federalnewsradio.com.